Hello and welcome back to another edition of Fun Friday. Of course, with another distinguished and special guest, a new partner with Lone Star Capital, the one, the only, the founder and principal of Evergreen Capital. Also, not to be slept upon as well, we have so many unique guests with all sorts of backgrounds and different, career paths and whatnot. But without exaggeration, he is a senior manager at one of the biggest tech companies in the world. In my opinion, you can look him up, you can kind of figure out what it may or may not be. Maybe we can get into that or not. But the largest tech company in the world, I would argue, Charles Zhu. How are you today?
Pretty good. Thanks, Craig. Thanks for inviting. It's a great honor to be on the show.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here. We obviously got familiar through, of course, Hunter Thompson's Raise Masters community. I believe we kind of became in contact with one another not too long ago, as a matter of fact. I believe it was in October in New Orleans, of all places. I think you and Rob did a podcast together for your podcast, which
Correct.
we'll give a plug and a shout out to. And we'll also figure out ways people can get in touch with you at the end of the show, as we always do. But we didn't meet that not too long ago. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I would put it in two ways. One, I started to learn Rob's work years ago from his book, essentially how to underwriting for commercial real estate and for multifamily specifically. So I know the name for a while. And then once I joined the Race Master, so he's one of the coaches there, right? So attending his coach session since last year, March. So it's kind of know who he is and then start to learn from him. But yeah, in person, really get to know him. And his story, and your not only him and your story as well, behind Lone Star is last year, October in New Orleans, like you said. So then I start really understand your investing philosophies, your business structure, and what kind of deal you guys are doing, and looking more details.
Absolutely. So, did you, considering that Rob was a coach in Raise Masters and whatnot, you spent some time with him with regards to reading the book, of course. Did that make you feel more comfortable to, partnering with a group like us, considering the back end time that was spent? And then, of course, our interactions not only there, but of course, you're from the Bay Area. You are not from, but you live in the Bay Area. We're, of course, from the Bay Area. You were nice enough to attend our company mixer or happy hour, holiday party, if you will, there in Menlo Park. So, were things like that making you, I guess, more comfortable to work with a group like us, would you say?
Absolutely. So there's two folds. One is those actually he has two books, right? So one is for underwriting, one is for structuring debt and capital. So those are very institution-faced book. It's not a for regular retail casual reading. I for some reason I like them both a lot. But it's not for everyone's day-to-day reading, for sure, right? But it's very professional or very, very technical and very institution-based. So one that tells me the professionalism and then the level of the operation that you guys run at, right? It's a institution-based, a very professional business operating model. So that gives you more confidence in in this business and in your company. The second phase is the personal touch. Is that you, are you know, so you have the knowledge? Do you have the hands-on experience, right? Do you have a very, are you a very easily approachable group? And are you down to earth? Are you very humble? Are you telling the investors what you just don't know for some things? We just, nobody would know. And then for those are things I'm looking for. So both of them, right? One is the technical specs. You got to be very solid and you got to be, know your game. Top niche. A second piece is keep being humble, being approachable, and also being real to the investors, right? This is a very real, very in-person relationship and business. So I want to see both of them for all from all my partners, right? So Lone Star being one of the examples, start to, I see them, I see you guys in both of those two categories.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I honestly have chills thinking about that because not only do we obviously want to take care of the structuring of the business, we want to make sure that, of course, we're competitive with regards to the deals that we offer, the operations, but of course, on the human side, I obviously know Rob like the back of my hand. He's one of my best friends. I know myself, and we really do pride ourselves on just being good, down-to-earth people and being honest. And we're not pretending that we have all the answers. We're not trying to be right all the time. We're just trying to get it right. So that really makes me feel very proud that you sense that about us, that, we're just trying to get 1% better each day. And, we obviously want to attract folks like yourself who you're clearly from a very high level organization. You've been in tech. You've seen what businesses should look like and how they should run. You're obviously high into management. So I'm sure your end, what you look for probably mirrors and match what you look for your hiring processes and the companies and people you want to work with. So having you audit us like that really does give me a massive, massive, I guess, boost to what we're doing. And it makes me feel very proud that we're on the right track. So thank you so much for those words there. What I'd like to ask everyone is, how did you get into real estate? What was your first real estate investment? What kind of gave you the real estate bug?
It was way back when I was graduate from my business school. So that was 2010, and then that's when I moved to the Bay Area for job. So we bought the first property in 2011. That's for our own primary residency, but then we moved. Then we have this house rented out. That's the first time we bought the house, and then we started renting it out to become a landlord a few years after. So that's the first quote unquote investment, and that's how I get to this business. At that time, people were still pretty scared about, we just passed 08, 09, and then it's not fully clear how the housing market will shake out. The house we bought actually is a new build, and then the builder came back to us once we signed after we signed the contract. They actually came back to us, give us another $30,000 credit for no reason. I don't know why. I still don't know why until today. But then it's never heard of, right? People don't even believe me. But that's what actually happened that time. So you can see how uncertain the market is and how scared people were that time. So, and then fast forward, right? So then I start to purchase property in California and also in Georgia, where I went to business school. So here and there, I start to accumulate a small portfolio of single family residents. But I quickly realized two things. One is it's just becoming more and more expensive. In California, all cash flow will be negative if I still keep buying those properties. And then that's the one problem, number one. Problem number two is I can't keep up with all the maintenance and all the management with the properties, both in California and in Georgia. So I kind of stuck. I can't scale, right? And I cannot build a large portfolio from a money standpoint and also from a time and effort standpoint. So I guess the next transition for me is going to a more passive, but more on the scalable front, which is large scale multifamily commercial real estate investing. That was back in 2018. I did it with one of my friends and my colleagues. So he shows me the rope, and then he showed me how to analyze those deals, what kind of return I should expect, and then I get more comfortable with not buying a single family house and owning it, but be part of a portfolio or investment, still using all the benefits from real estate. But yeah, it was a much more hands-off approach at a much larger scale. So to me, it makes a lot of sense for people or for the people in my situation. Different people is different, right? But I think that makes a lot of sense to me. So ever since I start to learn and start to explore, and then here we are, right? So I'm more on that now. I'm trying to actually educate more people about this asset class, still in real estate, but different from owning your own single family. There's pros and cons, and then I think it fits in certain group of people, not the other. But I try to educate people with this asset class so people are aware this is one of the options for them.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned so many important points, and there's so much to unpack there. So I love it. I think, a good natural place to start is to buy your primary residence. And, you live in the Bay Area, so not a lot of people can afford a $2 to $5 million house, which is seemingly what the market is there. You go to Palo Alto, you go to Fremont, you go to Hillsborough, you go to San Mateo, all through that area, even and now Willow Glen and San Jose, those are $2 million houses. It's pretty crazy. And I know we're getting a little niche into our micro market, and we can talk about this all day long, both being Bay Area people in that regard, of course. So you see that all day long, that it's very difficult to challenge and challenging to qualify for these houses just to buy it to start with. Secondly, as you mentioned, cash flow is going to get destroyed. These are, negative cap rates, meaning there's not cash flow coming in on these deals. These are what you call alligator properties. You have to feed it, unless, of course, you put more than 50% down. But, putting $1 million down to, make no money on it or just debt service is not really the sexiest, opportunity or value proposition, right? So if you're not going to buy a house, or after you bought that, well, you start wanting to invest in real estate, the natural progression is, okay, well, where am I going to go? I'm going to either go to another state. You mentioned you're in another state, you invest in California, but it's hard to cash flow. You're hoping for appreciation. But then there's the multifamily area and arena, which you understand probably looking at P&Ls, business plans, understanding the nature of value add, of course, educating yourself, see the clear path, it sounds like, to, making equity and money in commercial real estate investment, syndication and whatnot. So when did you start kind of turning your attention to syndication? Was it a couple years deep? Was it kind of when the market was rebounding in 2015 to 2020, where deals were, I guess, less desirable from the perspective of, going in cash flow to what you'd have to put down? When did that inflection point change? And then when did you kind of really start gearing and changing your investing model?
So that's really from between 2018 and 2020. I didn't really know what I was doing, so I was just following other people. I started learning, keep learning. So I invest a couple of deals. The market at that time, when we look back, the market like at that time was really, really good, because you are something waiting for you, which called COVID, and then the inflation, and also all the crazy increase, right? So that enabled me to be in a position to sell during 2021 and 2022. That's where you want to be, a selling and a selling position. That's what we did. Then, to my opinion, now is a place for you to be on the buying position. So you want to be purchase as assets when it's dropping, or everyone is kind of is Warren Buffett, right? So you're trying to be when you're fearful. So I think the person who can sell in 2021, 2022, and they did that, those are really, really brilliant people. I just happen to be luck. I just be very clear, right? So now I think the cycle changed a bit. It's a buying cycle now. That's why I'm getting more and more excited. And then think about in the next cycle, you will hit some recession, which we can talk about even more later. And you will hit another cycle for people to sell if you have good assets, right? We all need to be prepared for that cycle, with the understanding that you need to buy something in the buy cycle, which I think is really in the next 12 to 24 months. So I see the cycle like this, and that's what tricks me interested in here.
Yeah, well, and you couldn't be more accurate there. And it's kind of funny, as you know, in the residential space, there's not going to be too much of stress there, in my opinion. Obviously, the markets could change a little bit, and prices and certain markets, of course, are going to get impacted by affordability issues with regards to, rates, basically doubling from, what it was in COVID, as you alluded to, in 2021 and 2022, even. Basically are double. They're, about mid-high sixes right now. Obviously, some people got locked in sub 3% rates. So there's not going to be that much stress in that regard. And from a payment perspective, it's just payments are outrageous. But the flip side is commercial debt is, looming. There are a lot of maturities coming up, which is creating the opportunities that we're seeing here right now, which is awesome. So you had your investor appetite, but when did the capital raising appetite come into play? When did you kind of look around and say, hey, this is something I want to do on top of my ever so busy, executive level position at one of the biggest firms in the world? When did that transition happen, where you saw that as an extra way to maybe make a little extra income, or basically spread and share your knowledge, and what got you excited about the space?
To be honest, the income is not very, very lucrative at the beginning, at least for now. Compared to my day job, it's not really that high. But the reason why I'm interested in this space in the first place, again, it's not for the income. It's more about, we want to build our own investor space. Me and my business partner, we are actually trying to still looking for our own deals and then be becoming a owner operator in the multifamily and commercial real estate space. But the best time to raise capital is when you don't need the money, right? And then we try to really learn the rope how to build a investor basis. So that's triggered my interest in all the capital raising content and then join RaceMaster. And then I start to learn, you know, how to educate your avatars and how to reach out to your potential investors along the way. And then I also learned this model called fund to funds, right? So you can actually be part of the capital partner with other established GP teams like you guys. So that's a new business model to me. I didn't know that before. But I think this is also a good thing for people who wants to build a investor basis in a sense of you want to illustrate your ability to vet sponsors, to vet deals, and provide a consistent pipeline of investment opportunities to your investors. Fund for manager enable you to do all those three things. So that's why, more than anything, it's really about the opportunity or the ability to educate my investors along with a real and good opportunities and investment pipeline to them. So I think that's what we're looking for, and the biggest reason for me to become a fund manager in this regard. Again, educating people and providing them real pipeline of opportunities. So at the end, they can become a repeat investors to our own selves, right? So in the future, when we have our own deals, then we already have a well-established investor base there for us to activate.
Absolutely. Well, and it's so funny. Rob always says this: the best time to raise capital was 6 months to a year before you needed capital. So you're
Exactly.
priming the pump right now. You're getting people used to materials. And of course, the beauty of, you know, fund management and being a fund-to-fund partner with Lone Star Capital or any other, you know, high-level sponsor, you know, similar to us. There's obviously a ton of good people out there. We're not the only ones in the world, but hopefully you think of us when you think about Texas multifamily real estate, of course, as that's our specific niche is, hey, you have the proven track record to identify good deals. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm investing here. And, you know, here's my track record here. And then eventually, if you want to go to the owner operator route, well, you have the expertise, you have the capital sources, you have the people in your Rolodex that know, like, trust you and have been working with you for some time where you delivered some good results. And right now is a great time to learn it. And then obviously execute on the next step of it, which if you have time, which I don't know how you do with kids and such and a family on top of, you know, all your other executive work you have going on coupled with this. Don't know, I have a second of the day, but that's a really cool, really, really cool way to kind of reverse engineer it, if you will. And I recall something that you said to me. I believe it was either the first or second time we maybe connected. I think it was actually maybe at the Starbucks when we were at Phoenix here, and you said something like, "Hey, it's funny. What I want to achieve to do is ultimately this. I want to basically I can mathematically figure out how much I need to invest, how much you need to raise, how those deals will do. And over time, I can basically project and simulate and replace my income from my executive job over time with a pretty decent level of predictability." So, you know, was modeling like that also kind of in your, you know, your future visions and projections? Like, when did that kind of thought become you know, something that you kind of became obsessed with and was, you know, your overarching goal with real estate investing? Because as you mentioned, you know, if you get 5 to 8% back cash on cash on, let's say you throw $100,000 into a deal, which for you, not that much, but, you know, making 6 to 8 grand a year off that investment is not going to move the needle for you, of course, but that stacked over some time with raising other equity will. So how does that kind of all come into play?
So it's a very good question. I think about this a lot from a lens of what's the meaning of working, and then how do I like it or not? To me, obviously you want to the salary and then the working income give you a steady of cash flow. You need to pay the bills and then raise the family and all those, right? So for sure. But I think deeper level, working and they have a full-time job, more than anything, gives you a steady cash flow. So you have something you can transfer them into a passive wealth generating investment or assets. So to me, working a job gives you the first step, so you can do something to translate to transfer them into an assets. Once the goal is to me, the goal should be you do this more and more, then you grow your assets, which give you more and more independency from your job. A lot of people loves what they do. I like what I do as well. So you don't have to quit your job. You can do your job if you like. That's great. I think that's those are the really, really happy people in the world. But you have this choice. You have this ability. You are very independent from your job. So that's what I'm achieving. People all talk about FIRE and the independency, but I think it's not quitting your job. It's the ability that you can quit your job with a very solid assets in your portfolio. So I think that's the beauty for me, or my goal here, to build a asset class and to have a multifamily as an assets in my portfolio, as well as the ability to raise capital, one, providing value really to my investors, two, at the same time become a regular business model for myself, right? So you have the regular job, then you have your multi-family assets I'm investing in, and then you have this vehicle for raising capital. One, you can provide a value to the investors. Two, can give you a steady of income for the long run. So to me, those are very natural progression in my whole portfolio and my growth, essentially. And then again, I think if you love what you do in your as a full-time worker and a full-time job, great, keep that. But at the same time, don't forget that you want to build your own asset. You want to lay out very solid foundation and then reduce your independency to your job. That should be everyone's goal, and then that should be everyone's long-term plan, if you will.
That is so well said, and it's so humbling to hear it because I have to imagine, not to get too personal, that your income's substantially higher than the average person in America. But the fact that you're thinking from this perspective, and also when you think about the interesting nature of real estate, how it's passed down, when you set up trust, the legal structure, it's so beneficial and accretive long term to also, keep wealth from generation to generation together there, and to teach people how to fish, to teach people the beauties that real estate can provide. And what I say this, and so many things you just said just resonated with me so much, so just to unpack what you mean by that, I look at, I work in real estate, I eat, breathe, and sleep it. I'm gonna be a real estate lifer. And what I tell everyone is, when I grow up, I want to be working. I want to be a landlord when I grow up. So I'll just buy a bunch of houses here in Arizona while they can cash flow a bit. I'll live in them for a little bit and then I'll fix them up and then I'll let rents kind of catch up and then I'll buy another one while I can do that. But that run won't be there for very long. I think the window's closing, similar to what we saw in the Bay Area, of course, for anyone who bought probably pre-2015 and before. Those opportunities now are kind of non-existent just with how that's structured there. But to kind of create a system where you can have money coming in and working for you is so crucial. So I look at everything. Everything I want to do needs to have a compounding nature, whether it be relationships like us building one here and then further ingratiating it and entrenching it, whether it be that or with investing or how I put my money and time, it all needs to be to that long-term goal. So I look at real estate similarly to that. And everything you said there is kind of mirroring and matching how I'm planning to do my life by design as well. We all need to get the vehicle to invest in real estate, whatever that may look like. So you've chosen your executive job as the main vehicle, and these are other side and ancillary ways to kind of even cement and further the foundation, which is awesome. So with that said, you also have a very, very interesting angle. So as Hunter Thompson would like to call it, in the Raise Masters community and other people, it's interesting. We call it an avatar. So given your unique background and your avatar being a little bit different, I understand that you use slightly different mediums than the typical capital raiser. So I would love for you to kind of talk about something that we haven't talked about on this show before on Fun Friday or Capital Spotlight on a Lone Star umbrella that not many people know about, that I would love for you to kind of introduce and explain to people what it is, the purpose of it and the significance for, in your culture for who you raise from.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally, it's all the same idea. You want to be providing value to your investors. You want to educate them. You want to be their trusted partner in this investment journey. A little bit different here for me specifically is my background is I was born and grew up in China. I came to the States for my graduate school. And then I stayed here after that. So there's a lot of people like me. It's not only from China, from all over the world. But then we, using me right, as an example, you have a very, very busy job. You start to climb a ladder in corporate America. Then you keep working, right? You have high income or high tax, or you have a very demanding job, and your family start to grow. So at some point, you kind of forgot about what to do about the money. You just put there, right? And then you just put there in your company stock. Most of people, at least in Silicon Valley, you have RSUs, you have company options, but you just put there, and or you just buy S&P 500 index, which is a great investment. I think it's a very good investment for anyone to own. But then that's it. You stop there. You don't think anything else anymore. You buy one or two houses. It's a very painful experience. It could be a very painful experience to manage. And then you said, "Oh, I tried. It didn't work for me." So you're done with it. That's a shame. I think that's you're missing a lot of things. You're leaving a lot of things on the table. And also, so I'm one of my avatars is the people from China. They have their advanced degree here. They are, progressing in their working environment, which is awesome. And then they are very over-indexed in stock. They want to diversify their portfolio, but they don't know how to. They know real estate. We love real estate, but the only thing they know is buying a single family house, and then they self-manage it or having other people to manage it. But then your cash flow is even lower, so they kind of stuck. So I want to provide value to this group of people, but the problem is, most of those people, like me, actually, I don't really go to Facebook too much. I'm not on Instagram a lot, but we still use social media a lot. It's just different platform. Two specific ones. Maybe it's getting more and more popular in the US as well. One is called WeChat, right? So WeChat is everyone, most of people
Yes.
using in China, and also a lot of people in US as well. But also another one is called a Little Red Book. So it's essentially a social media platform. It's like a Facebook plus Instagram. So again, similar idea is just where the avatar is, right? I just go to the place people mostly hang out, and those are people happen to me to be my avatar. So I think the idea here is you understand your specific niche, be as specific as possible, and then understand where do they spend their time. Where do they go to consume content, to consume social media, educational content, right? It just go there instead of just, oh, everyone raising capital or educating people on syndication is on Instagram and is on Facebook. Let's go there too. Don't do that. And then if you need to go there, just do that, but not necessary. You need to ask the question first: who is my avatar? Where do they go? And then see if you can go there. So I think that is the approach I'm taking. Again, fundamentally, it's the same idea, same logic. It's really just the difference is understanding your background, your avatar, and understanding where they are, and then just really go all in on the place, to the place that they are, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. So, how would you compare WeChat and you said Little Red Book, which I didn't know about that one. So, thank you so much for the information here. I'm learning something new, and I always love speaking with people who are in rooms and in arenas different than myself because I can always take away some knowledge and insights. So, thank you so much for the lesson of the day, which you just provided me with, which is Little Red Book. You said that's kind of like a mixer of Facebook and Instagram. How would you describe WeChat and is that just for people that are, basically immigrant Americans, maybe Chinese Americans that live in America right now? Is that also people that are in China currently, where it's kind of a cross section of both? What is the typical person that does, use WeChat like? Kind of give us that background if you don't mind.
The beautiful things about those two platforms are it's not only people in China or in the US, it's really the global Mandarin speaking community, if you will. So it
Oh,
doesn't matter
okay.
if it's in mainland, it's in other parts of Asia or in the US or even in Europe. It doesn't really matter because it's really a language-based environment or ecosystem, if you will. So that's given me a lot broader just for instead of limiting myself to people from China and US, it's really a global language environment or ecosystem. So I can tap into, right? So I actually talked to quite a few people who are in Europe or who are still in mainland or who are in Canada, right? They are still in this ecosystem because of language. So they are all interested in this alternative asset class in the US because you know what? Canada housing is very expensive. Europe housing is very expensive. It's not very practical to make a cash flow positive and also have a very good, very predictable appreciation like US. They don't even have 30 years fixed loans, right? Not in every country. So that's all very interesting. And that essentially opens up the entire world as long as it's in this language environment and ecosystem, which is a lot of people there.
That's awesome. I mean, Mandarin's probably what the most spoken language in the world. I mean, English is kind of the international second language, but that could clearly be changing. So it's probably what Mandarin and English are the two most. I mean, that and maybe a Spanish potentially are the three most spoken languages. So it's really a massive audience there, and also gets you more niche. You're obviously not the only person in the world doing that, of course, but it gets you more specific. And I have to imagine the trust factor is built more with your pedigree and background. A lot more easing is probably and comfort is created due to the community aspect there for sure, which is really, really cool. And with that said, I have to imagine a lot of your avatar or investors are probably, of course, from there, but you're in the Silicon Valley. You're talking with executives, CEOs, founders. These are people that are probably really, really stock, probably heavy, 401ks and whatnot. So you're probably
Absolutely.
providing them something that they haven't even been th thinking about, right? And offering them some true diversity, not, oh, well, I'm just in the S&P 500, or hey, I'm an Apple, I'm an Amazon, I'm a Google for my stocks. I've got, a ton of, I hit a 5-year point where you get some stock options, something like that. And they're probably looking around, or they hit an IPO and they're looking around like, well, I need to put some money elsewhere outside of my house, outside of my tech, plan this, that. So is that kind of who you typically raise fund, or are Bay Area like folks who are, higher end executives like yourself, typically speaking, and maybe employees even as well that maybe work under you?
True, correct. So it's more of a people again, they have very good education. They climbed the ladder in corporate America for 5, 10, 15 years. And then those are people who have good paying jobs. They like what they do, which again, awesome. But they would like to understand what is the options out there to safely grow their net worth and then to again safely to enjoy the benefits from real estate without putting more work in their already very busy schedule. Now, it's not necessary to be on the executive level in Silicon Valley. It could be just a long time or very successful just regular employee in Silicon Valley or in Seattle or New York or other cities as well. So that's less important. The more important part is they have a very good career, a very good income, and they are very stock heavy. They're very over-indexed in stock, and they have the desire. They know that's a problem, but they want to solve it in a, again, a safe and also a transparent way. One thing really sort of helped my theory here is over the course of pandemic, you see this dramatic change in stock valuation. Your portfolio, especially in 2020, in within 60 days, right, your portfolio got cut in half and then doubled. So you're really lost, right? You lost, myself included. So it's a really a very turning point for me to understand that, okay, I need to have some control, at least of part of my portfolio. Otherwise, I'm fully stocked or fully invested in stock, which I don't have any control, right? So that is a real need, a real problem for a lot of people. And I think the asset class we are working on here is a very good solution, at least one of very good solution for their problems. So at least I want to introduce that as an option to those people. Say, hey, this is available. It's not, I didn't invent that. It's been there for years, for decades. And then this is one of the things it require relatively more significant capital to invest in. That's why I think you need to have a good career or good capital accumulation at the first place. But then this option is available for you, right? And then we can together build a stable, a more stable and a more controllable asset class and portfolio together. So I do that with my own capital and my own portfolio, right? So I just want to showcase that again, more than anything, educating people, make them aware this is one of the options. And then what you touched earlier is the trust piece. It's not only language based, right? It's also background. I'm just a regular investor myself. I just a regular student myself before. I'm just someone work a large company or small company, doesn't really matter. Work your way up. I'm just very average, simple person. If I can do this, you can do that too. Absolutely, you can, right? And then the value I provide to my community, to my follower or to my investors is really connecting people like you guys and other well-established, high-quality sponsors with a high-quality investment opportunity. That's my interest, and also that's kind of I see that my responsibility to my investors. So I try to merge those two things together and providing value in this entire value chain here.
That's awesome. And that's very well said, very well put together. And it's not easy to do all of those things to tie it in, to build the trust, to have the relationships. It just takes time. And, truly, you said anyone can do it. So I really, really love that. With that said, what typical deals do you raise for? You work with people like us who are multifamily owner operators. Are you working with, mobile home parks? Do you think of anything else like that? What will you touch? What will you not touch?
Right now, so far, I've been only raised for multifamily and a class between class A and B, sometimes B minus. I haven't tapped into mobile home park or even self-storage or the other like car wash or
Short-term
retail
rental funds,
rent funds yet. So I think those are very interesting opportunities. The reason I haven't tapped into that yet is, again, based on my avatar and my potential investors, right? So they are start getting into this alternative investment space. I want them to have a feeling, have a sense, have a good experience first, meaning multifamily, especially in the A and B class domain, it's easier for my avatar to understand, to accept this is one of their portfolio, this is one of their assets versus just go straight to a st self storage, right? And then you need to do a lot of convincing, a lot of education, and a convincing mind they don't buy or they don't invest. And also, I don't want them to miss out this asset class altogether just because of a very steep learning curve. I want to avoid that. So I try to give them a or providing them investment opportunity that they can digest more easily. The real goal is having them to be comfortable with this asset class, and then you can talk about more value add, more high risk, high reward opportunities. But at the beginning, I want my investors to be more comfortable. Just switch from stock and a single family to this asset class as the first step. Then we can do more exciting opportunities down the road. This is sort of my progression.
Yeah, and that makes so much sense too. Because frankly, let's call it what it is. Self storage. When a recession happens, guess what? You may, revoke your self storage. Maybe you don't need that anymore, and you're going to cut down on expenses, and you let that go. But workforce housing, or kind of fringe housing between, just above workforce, which is, hey, maybe I'm just getting in as some sort of, sales development representative or some sort of entry level engineer or manager or something like that. That means you're probably maybe at an A minus like property. You're still a renter at that point. So people can wrap their heads around, and it's a lot easier to wrap your head around and sell the idea of, listen, this is housing. It's well below replacement costs. This is a very solid market, an area with growth going on. A lot easier to sell that. And you can see the need of that with any market cycle happening, as opposed to, an alternative, more alternative. It's funny when people call multifamily real estate investing alternative. It's like, yes, well, it's not technically a stock or a bond. So it's, I guess not as mainstream, but it's private. But I always kind of chuckle to myself, and I don't know if you do as well, when people consider that alternative when it's all around us. You know what I mean? It's actually one of the earliest and first investments one could even possibly do is to buy real estate and, own and operate that.
And also, just I lived in an apartment before when I was a student, right? And most of people in some point in their life, they rent a apartment somewhere. So you don't have to explain that. it's really an easy way for people to accept this asset class, versus especially for my people, my investors, not many people are familiar with self-storage or a mobile home park, right? So then you have to explain the whole industry first. That takes a very long time to for them to get comfortable, just give you or just committed $100,000 for something they never used it before, right? Those are good asset class if you invest it right, for sure. But it's just easier or more comfortable for people to accept something they are already familiar with, which is apartment buildings for most of the people.
Absolutely. So when you do make an investment or raise equity for a deal, what are some of the things that you look for typically? Just any fundamentals, any philosophies that you have? Some people only want to look for value add plays. Some people need to have a certain cap rate there or a certain debt coverage servicing ratio. What do you look for typically speaking when you look through these deals? I'm sure you audit and scrutinize underwriting pretty rigorously when you do want to make an acquisition or raise. So what are some of the things that you seek?
First and foremost is the team, is the people. So it's really for vetting the sponsor team is the number one priority. It's interesting that many people ask me, "Hey, where do you invest?" I told them it's not really the where I invest, it's who I invest with. Right, so I vet sponsor extensively from their past experience. How did they project, and then what is the actual came in? What's the difference between the two, and what's the reason for that? Some people did a lot better than they thought, but that's just a luck because of market cycle. Nothing wrong with that, but you need to understand the reason behind difference between actuals and projection. The second thing for the sponsor is the style. Are they conservative? I like work with people who are conservative. Everyone would say they are conservative, but I see some people, some groups, they didn't do any deals for the last 12 months, or very few deals for the last 24 months. If there's no deal, it's better than bad deal, right? If they are that disciplined, I like that. And then last piece is, are you professional and approachable? Like we kind of touch base a little bit early. Are you organized? Very clean structure. Do you have the institution facing this look? And also, are you responsive and willing to talk to me and then walk me through your deals, how you think about it, what's your struggle? And those things really make me more comfortable and then like working with those kind of people. So that's number one, vetting the sponsor. In terms of deal itself, yes, I look into underwriting extensively. I want to see very conservative, and I should say reasonably conservative assumptions, right? Otherwise, you won't be able to buy any deals.
Yeah,
Especially.
you gotta have a little bit of an imagination, right?
So it's reasonably conservative. So I want to see your assumption in exit cap rates, how much expansion on a yearly basis, 15 points, 25 basis points. And also the rent growth timing is a really big one for me. I don't want to see a rent growth assumption in year one being very large. I actually want to see rent growth increase nothing in year one, but mostly in year two and year three. So that gives you a lot better buffer, because everything will go wrong during a business plan every single time, right? Most of the time, I should say. So those are the underwriting assumption I was looking to. Then going to your real question, the deal I'm looking to is really class A and B minus at the most. Those multifamily assets in a high growth market. Those are the Houstons, the Dallases, right? It's very Those are very competitive markets. But I like those markets. One is because the fundamental is strong. Two is when you are selling the assets in the future, you have a bigger market to sell those assets as well. So high quality A to B classes, multifamily in large and then high growth markets. Those are the things I'm looking to.
Awesome. And thank you for the comprehensive breakdown. I always just like to hear how people analyze and assess situations. You just never never believe sometimes what people say with regards to what they look for. They look for the most obscure things. So I like to hear how someone like you thinks and how you perceive the markets and such. Wrapping up with some kind of final questions here. You obviously have a very good pulse on the market and whatnot. What asset classes? Obviously, we know, office is going to struggle, and you can say that as an answer. But what assets do you think might struggle coming up here as, a looming recession is kind of underway? And also, it could be tech. If you think tech's going to struggle, you obviously have an acumen into that. So what do you think is gonna, be struggling here coming up? It could be the consumer. So be curious to know your thought here coming up as we approach a change in the market.
Obviously, yeah, office, I do think it will be one of the problems. This, a lot of people talk about this already. So on top of that, I think in commercial real estate space, right, all the residential or living facing assets like multifamily and the mobile home park will be relatively on the safer side, in my opinion. More commercial facing office being one of the biggest example, but also even retail space. When the recession hits, will have the first wave of impact on those assets, in my opinion. And then from a job standpoint, I live in Silicon Valley, and then I've been in this industry for a long time. I do think with all the AI-driven technology, there will be a major shift in the workspace, meaning a lot of people will lose their job. It's already happening from 2 years ago, right? And at the same time, I do think it will create a lot of opportunities. So I'm actually not too sad about having more and more AI technology. It's like having email in the first in a workplace 20, 30 years ago. You eliminates old ones and it creates new ones. So I'm not too worried about the high tech employment. I know we are in the middle of layoff in many, many companies, but I think I'm still hopeful over the long run, it will only creates or encourage people to come up with new ideas, new opportunities, and new jobs. Not necessarily in a form of large tech companies, but if the economy itself will survive, will digest, and then it will be a better, newer, and then more opportunities out there eventually.
I think it'll create a lot more efficiencies, but it's for sure, as you mentioned, the shakeup is going to happen. There will be a natural kind of turnover and churn of some of these jobs here, but efficiency is going to happen. And I remember when, ChatGPT came out, we all thought it was going to take all of our jobs. Then you realize, hey, well, it's certainly an incredibly useful and powerful tool, and we don't even know the full potential of it yet. But it's not taking everyone's job today or tomorrow. But frankly, this is why I like real estate and the private equity side of it, because we're forcing and creating the value there. We're kind of seeing, a human problem that was not done correctly, where we're going to kind of implement in our skill set and tools to deliver returns that's more of a, forced from a value add in human capital and resources perspective of, fixing rents. We're obviously going to put our tech packages in and implement AI where we can to, of course, create efficiencies there. And we're actually implementing AI into our entire management team as we speak right now to only become more lean and more efficient. And maybe that replaces a person and it costs us 30,000 instead of hiring someone for 60. So we get us some efficiencies there, and that naturally creates and or eliminates jobs there, but it will create more efficiencies. And I do think, generally speaking, my thought is that there'll be a lot more smaller companies that are more of a service base as opposed to just bigger corporations absorbing more companies, if that makes sense. It's more going to be a one-off service individual SaaS setup as opposed to a massive kind of company like a Microsoft buys a smaller shop, brings it into their offices or whatever it's called, and they package it there and offer it out there. So that's what I think the future may or may not look like, but obviously only time will tell. What I guess on the flip side gets you most excited with this opportunity to come up, not to be negative, we're super obviously excited to be buyers in this market coming up. But for you, what gets you excited? What gets you nervous? We already talked about what gets you nervous, but what gets you excited for the opportunity here coming up?
I'm actually getting more and more excited just looking at the deals that come to my desk these days. Last 12 months has been very, very rough. Most of the deals I saw doesn't make sense in the first place. Now this gap between seller and buyer start to shrink significantly, and you see the opportunities, they just didn't exist in the 12, 24 months ago. That's driven by mostly driven by debt. the death structure start to the death start to maturing, and people start to not panicking, but really have the sense of urgency to do something about it. And then the beauty of that is, I tell all my investors, the beauty of that is the debt is a problem, and the asset itself is not a problem. Asset is actually very, very high quality. You have 90 plus occupancy. You have very steady income. So the asset is fine. The problem is the debt. So that creates the opportunity for us to buy those assets at a reasonable price. I'm not saying buying it at a crazily low price. I don't think it will happen, but at least we're going to the normal baseline versus the last 12 months. It's not even possible to have a normal baseline there. So that's what I'm just excited about having the opportunity to buy good assets at the normal price. If you can do that, I think it's fine. You don't need to have a crazy bargain in this industry to be successful. You just need to know your game, know your number, do the work, execute well, and then buy a good assets with reasonable price, then you're good. I think that we can do that in the next 12 to 24 24 months.
Yeah, and I think you said a word earlier on in the podcast in the interview, which is just being disciplined. And exactly as you said, being disciplined, picking your spots. We did not go too crazy and expand too heavily in 2021 and 2022. Rob and Kent were very, very strict and disciplined with what we acquired, and that will be the gift that keeps on giving is the discipline, because now it can be more aggressive while there's obviously better buying opportunities here coming up. Although raising equity may be the X factor and slightly more difficult, but we're going to need partners like yourself, of course, to leverage the network to come together to accomplish these big goals. The final question that I like to ask everyone is, what is your hottest real estate take? So a hot take is something that might be contrarian, something that maybe you believe, something that's more true to you and your thought process that maybe others don't agree with or might not say. So mine, I always like to say, and if you're listening to this show, you've heard me say this for about a month now, and this is true. I don't want rates to get cut anytime soon, because I want there to be a little bit more distress, more maturities coming up. I do think that once the first rate cut is done, albeit 25 basis points, not a ton, institutions will be back. Sellers will start selling because the market will be more than one buyer or a couple buyers there, which will drive the price up. So I don't want rates to get cut anytime soon. So turning over the question to you, do you have any kind of takes or philosophies that are maybe contrarian or different than how other people think?
By the way, the things you mentioned is already happening in Silicon Valley. The single family, the open house is already like exploding since the beginning of this year. It's crazy. I can't even imagine if the Fed really start to drop rates, what will it look like? But my hot take is similar, actually somewhat similar to yours. I actually want to have or prefer having multiple smaller recessions versus just keep printing money and then depress a healthy recession into the future. Then you are accumulating to a disaster recession down the road.
It's a bigger reset, right? A bigger a more exacerbated and over the top recession, longer winded, a longer delay creates maybe a bigger tidal wave, right?
So I think not only in the US, but it's everywhere. Most of the central banks, they are so used to it because all the political environment, and it's so much easier just to do their job, make everybody happy, just start printing money. And then I think that's been happening, right? So since COVID, that is my biggest worry, not actually having enough recession, a smaller healthy recession along the way every few years versus a big doom situation, reset recession and 20, 15 years down the road.
I love that take. And no one said that yet. So thank you so much for the original thought. Charles Zhu, principal and founder, CEO of Evergreen Capital. Also, as we know, one of the busiest men in America, as he is a senior manager at one of the largest tech firms in the world. If you want to look him up, you can maybe get an idea as to where that is. Where can we find you? Where can people connect to you, listen to your podcast, and get in touch with you if they want to invest, learn more, have a conversation, and just discover more of who you are?
So the best way to find me is really to go to our website. That's investegcapital.com. EG stands for Evergreen, right? Investegcapital.com. So we post regularly all the newsletters, all my interviews with different people, including with Rod. And then we post our latest investment thesis and opportunities there as well.
Awesome. And then LinkedIn, social media, any places they could find you there as well?
Sure. Yeah, I'm all over the Instagram, so you can find me there, evergreen.charles.xu. Actually, Craig, let me go back and give you the detailed handles there. So in the podcast, you can just say
Put it
you
in the
can put
bio. Yes, sir.
in the bio and the show notes there. I'm actually less active on LinkedIn for real estate because Apple is really restrict. So
Got it.
all my LinkedIn is my Apple network, then all my Facebook and then LinkedIn and then Instagram is all business and real estate investment. So
Gotcha.
I can separate that for you.
Cool. Well, very good. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for giving us some incredible golden nuggets, letting us learn about other social media platforms and ways to reach other folks versus the mainstream it takes. And I love, finally, of course, multiple small recessions as opposed to one GFC-like environment. Thank you so much for coming on. Look forward to seeing you soon. Actually, as a matter of fact, it is okay. I'm going to see you probably in about 20-ish days. So looking forward to seeing you
That's
soon. We'll
right.
have a nice dinner together and get together in Phoenix, of course, for Race Fest. Thank you so much, listeners of the show. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you next week.